Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I like my women like I like my...
Cigarettes!
Cigarettes with a nice big butt. And a little bit ashy. And picked up by bums. I don't know.
I like my women like I like my...
Fajitas.
Smoking hot, and you can hear them coming. I like my women like I like my...
Losing lottery ticket.
I like my women like I like my losing lottery ticket. Toe up outside of a liquor store.
Pocket party.
Did you actually work as a bus driver in LA?
Santa Monica, like Santa I said.
And how long did you do it?
I did it for 3 months.
Wow.
Well, I quit because after the first day of training, I crashed into two police cars. So
oh
I was
my
like,
gosh.
Yeah, it was so embarrassing, man. That was a sign from God. Like, man, you're going to get off these buses, man. Yeah. You're going to kill somebody. Like, you swipe Santa Monica right. Police cars, bumper hanging.
Everybody listen to Derek Carter.
Yeah.
We all know he's the party starter. So if you want to listen to a podcast for free, listen to a Pocket Party. Pocket Party. Durant.
Hey guys, do me a favor, subscribe to this podcast. I know you're listening, but hit subscribe. That way when a new episode comes out, it'll be there waiting for you. All right? And if you want to give us a little donation, DarrenCarter.com, hit that PayPal button. Or if you're into Venmo, it's at Darren Carter Comic on Venmo. I'm also on the Cash App, $ Darren Carter Comic. But the best thing you can do is subscribe. That way the new episode will be waiting for you. And thanks again for checking us out and starting that party. So let's do it right now. Let's start that party in your ear holes.
Pocket Party.
And we're back, everybody. It's your host, Darren Carter, the party starter. We are in a park in Monrovia. After the show, it's dark. And I'm here with the one and only Doc Willis.
Yeah, we out here night creeping. It's Doc Willis in the building. What's going down?
What's up? Well, we're not really in a building.
Yeah. It's weird. We're two older dudes sitting in the park on a bench talk.
We're facing each other, so it looks like, are these homeless guys going to play chess? Where's the chessboard?
I was just thinking the same shit. I was like, this is like a fucking, it's like a picnic table. If you ever seen the cartoons, that's what we're sitting on. We're sitting on the motherfucking.
Yeah. And Monrovia, I would describe it as a, it's kind of, they describe it as like a throwback, like a Mayberry type of town. It kind of has that small town USA kind of vibe.
Yeah. It, when you inhale a little bit.
Yeah.
That's racism right there. I can smell it. I'm fucking with y'all.
Yeah. You're like, and by the way, there's
you
some.
You said Mayberry, so back in.
And there's some cops right there. Oh, wait, are they going to, he saw me when I put my flashlight on, but that was good.
Hilarious. He panicked.
You're white, bro. Yeah, I know. He's like, oh, this cop already has one. He's doing an interview with him.
What are you doing?
I know.
Like, fucking hilarious.
I know. I'm like, And then that must have looked weird. Like, why is he lighting up those leaves over there? But, yeah, but it's like, how do you, like, okay, let's say coming into Monrovia, have you been here before?
Yeah, this is my second time.
Wow, I actually like it.
Yeah, you know what? The vibe is cool. It's kind of it's like an old Western mixed with a little bit of Microsoft. It's modern.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's got that same, like, Billy the Kid, Young Guns feeling to it. It's weird. Yeah. Y'all got to come out here and see. It's nice.
Yeah, there's, like, stones and stuff like that right there. People can drink water in that little, like, stone-looking house.
Yeah.
And there's a statue. I did a joke about that statue right there.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's the one you was talking about.
Yeah.
So that's
Mark Twain.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
His book had okay, Huckleberry Finn, we know what the N-word. Okay, well, we gonna go on there and finish, man.
Dude, that cop just keeps driving around the park right now. Oh my gosh.
Oh, probably because I got my hoodie on.
He's just circling
officer,
the block.
We're good.
Nah, yeah, we're just doing a podcast.
Nah, hey, they good.
Yeah, they're good. They're just like but no, it's funny because I on stage I said this, but it's true. I go, I was walking here, I go, I'm at an age now where when I see a statue, I'll actually stop and look at it. And then I'll see the placard and be like, oh, let me read about this. What's going on here?
Yeah. That's real talk, though. Like,
yeah,
I'm in the same age bracket. So it's like I get caught up in the stars and the planets and shit.
Yes.
Like I took a picture of the conjunction of the Venus and Jupiter conjunction
In
February. I was like, hey, everybody, look. And then nobody give a fuck but old people. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, like Halley's Comet. I remember that was a thing.
Yeah.
Now I'm all nervous about bugs. And that was just the... antenna wire, but that was it was interesting. Hey, actually, I like this quote on that statue. It said something
like, that was real. What you read?
Yeah, it said something like, a man who does not read books is no better than a man who can't read at all.
Wait a minute, that's the same thing,
is it?
Oh, you just said not read books. You mean a man that read books?
Oh no, let's say you can read, but you choose not to read any books, then you're the same as a guy who can't read at all. Like a guy who can't read.
Oh, that's what it says?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's probably more eloquent than that. But
definitely, it's got to be.
I read it like
if 2 hours. If it sound like that, then it
would. The guy who read the books, then he's no better than.
Fucking hilarious.
A man who reads, I don't know what it is. You guys, look, go to the park and look it up yourself. I put it in my Instagram stories. You know what? It's going to be driving me nuts. Let me just get the damn quote down. Okay, hold on. This is real talk, real time. Here we go. Going to my Instagram. Here we go. Here we go. Oh, here it is.
It's a pretty cool statue. Check this out.
Yeah.
Mark Twain. The man who does not read good books has no advantage over the man who can't read them.
There it is. And I was thinking, I don't really read books like I used to.
Yeah.
I mean, I read, but, you know, I'm only reading the internet or whatever. But I do listen to books. I don't know. Are you into audiobooks at all? Do you ever listen?
Nah, I like to read them.
You like to read books?
Yeah, because I like to, you know, have you ever read a book?
No.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, I have. Yeah. You're like, no, sure. No.
Like, but I like reading because it's, if an audiobook says a word that I don't understand, I have to pause it. And but when you're reading a book, you kind of get the spelling of it, right, and then you go, what is this word? You know what I mean? Like, let me look that shit up right quick. So I just like the fucking feeling stupid a little bit.
And when you read a book, do you like to read a real book that you can hold and you know, smell and turn the pages, or do you like to read like an online book?
I have
with your device.
Only books that I have, 99%, the only book that I have that's online is the Book of Enoch. Fucking, I had to, you know, like, you know, you hear about the Bible and then you hear about this Book of Enoch. And I was like, let me fucking get this shit.
Yeah.
And I ordered, and I got one from online, and that's the only online book. Oh, you know what? I read Outliers. By Malcolm Gladwell.
Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah. So that would be another book that I had online.
Because what I do like about the online books is, like you said, you can like tap it and then instantly like it'll Google the word, like it'll search the word. So you're like, as opposed to like a book that you pick up, then you're like, well, now actually that's no big deal, right? You just have your phone next to you and be like,
right,
what does this mean?
But you know what's weird about that is like, when you look on online, when you tap on Google, can you look at it? But there's something about the work ethic that you have to do when you're reading a page book.
Yeah.
Then you have to sit that down and you have to go and then go look up. And then it's like the work ethic makes you have more of a photographic memory.
And connect with it more.
Yeah, connect with it more. So that's what I like about it.
You're right. That is the advantage that I love about it, because you can also, you know, I've learned now to highlight more, circle certain things, put notes in the margins. You know, that's because another thing with age, you're like, well, with me, I didn't do it when I was younger, you know, and now I'm like, oh, yeah, I love this because this is really.
You didn't highlight shit when you were younger? Well, I'm not. You got photographic memory, like, this guy.
I didn't really highlight. I would just. Because I wouldn't make notes in the margins. I would just, like, circle something, and then that would be it.
So you never had, like, a point in a book or a paragraph in a book that struck you so much that you had to highlight, like this is good shit right here. I'm going to come back and read this part.
Now I do. But when I was in my early 20s, no. I honestly didn't, you know.
Yeah, I used to do that all the time.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Wow. I used to be like, when I find something that would strike me to a point, I'm like, this is fucking amazing right here.
Yeah.
I'm going to go on ahead and then quote that to a chick, you know. Oh, these words is going to kill this chick when I say. She don't even know I'm plagiarizing. But
to be or not to be, that is the question.
To be or not to be in that ass. Sorry, ladies.
Sorry, I highlighted that part. I had to use it. Yeah. Oh, you know what? Let me just double check just to make sure we're recording. Only because it's dark out here and I'm like, yes, we're good. Okay, good. I always get nervous about that. Wouldn't that suck? We're sitting here in the park for no reason.
Oh,
just
man,
talking about books, not even recording it. Damn.
It's already a topic. People be like, books? Why are they talking about books? Why are they talking about Harry Styles?
But you know why I like audiobooks is that way I can be active and do other things. So I like to exercise and go for these long walks and hikes and stuff and even jog. I literally have, like, walked listening to books, jogged listening to books, go up hills. I was listening to this book by Ernest Hemingway, and he's talking about being on a safari in Africa and you're just out there, and he's talking about seeing the lion, and this one guy basically, like, freaked out and looked like a, you know, wimp in front of his girl. And then the guy that was on the safari was like, you know, he said an old Ethiopian proverb, and he's like, there's three times a lion hunter is afraid. He has fear. The first time is when he sees the lion's tracks. The second time is when he hears the lion's roar. And the third time is when he lays eyes on the lion for the first time. Like that. And that kind of hit with that.
Fucking, you remember that while you were exercising? Like, how? Like, it's so weird.
Honestly, I just rewound it and listened to it again.
Oh, okay.
I go, that's good. So I listened to it again. And it caught me. And also, at the time, I used to work out of the boxing gym. And I was thinking, like, I wonder if that's how it is with boxing. Like, I asked this guy, you know, Buddy McGirt, 2-time world champion, you know, big fighter. Now he's a coach. And I said, how is it with, like, and he told me the different ways that a fear could actually, a little bit, you know, would enter a boxer's mind.
Okay.
And I'm like, what's the first time? Like, when you sign the contract? And he's like, no, that's when you know you're getting paid. So you're not really afraid right there.
Right.
I forget what they were, but I know one of them was, I want to say, like, when you first see your opponent for the first time, like, in real life. Like, not just videos or photos. You actually see him. He's right there, you know, that kind of thing.
That's the guy I got to fuck.
You got to knock this guy out. He's going to knock me out. And also, I remember one time, I might be confusing that story, but I remember one time he said, like, you could have all the crew with you, you know, the whole posse. You know, you got 20 guys walking into the ring. But you go 3 steps up into the ring, and they all go back to their seats.
Yeah.
And you're just by yourself up there, like, okay, you know?
Yeah, it's that moment, that clarity where it's like, it's all you. Ain't nobody else fucking here. It's kind of like what we do as comedians.
Mm-hmm.
Because we'll be in the back, in the green room, kicking it. Hey, you fucking in it. And then all of a sudden, it's that moment where you're walking, and then you step on stage, and you're like, God damn.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Yeah, you're boxing the audience, and you're fucking dipping in and out this fucking man. Yeah.
Like right before you when you're backstage behind the curtain, they're like, are you guys ready for your next comedian? That's when you're like, all right, here we go. And then it's a little bit more like when the DJ's, you know, playing them up too much. Like, y'all ready for your next... Here he is, the one and only. And then you're just like, oh, gosh, I hope this goes, you know, and usually it does, but, you know.
What is his name? The DJ and the people that bring us up is similar to the guy
Oh, the ring announcer.
The ring announcer. Yeah. What's his name?
Get ready to rumble.
Let's
get ready to rumble.
How am I forgetting his fucking name?
Let's get ready. It's fight time. Yeah. What's that thing? Let's go.
It's the same hype though. It's exactly the same.
This
escalation of, and then there's this expectation of this great fight or this great performance we have to do as comedians.
Do you remember? I remember one time this DJ asked me this question, and I hated it because it was on the radio and I just wasn't prepared. He asked me, "What's the worst show you ever did, or the worst time you bombed?" But because I think as a comedian, I don't really like to dwell on that. So I don't really like. I'm not like, well, it was the summer of 90, you know. But have you had that happen where there was just like a really bad, like,
yeah,
ew.
Yes. Yeah. I have two. One was when I first started comedy in Detroit. I did a fucking cabaret.
Mm.
Yeah, you already know. A goddamn cabaret. It was not comedy. They put me up there. Yeah, next comic to the stage. We're going to have Doc Willis go up there. Packed. And not only it was a club. It was like, they had a cabaret celebration, but in a music club, dance club.
Wow.
And it was fucking horrific. Wow. It meant so silent. I didn't get booed, you know, which is good. Yeah, you know, when a black comic say he ain't never been booed, that's real talk. People would say, hey, man, you ain't a real comic unless you got booed. Booed, that's bullshit.
How did you feel after that? How long had you been doing comedy at that point?
I didn't even really do comedy at that point. It was like, I did an open mic. Yeah. I took a comedy class at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle in Royal Oak, Michigan.
Yeah, it's a great club. I got to play it once.
Oh, yeah. Fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
And I took a class there, and I was like in and out. I wanted to do comedy, but I was like, wasn't sure of myself wanting to do it.
Yeah.
Meaning the confidence. So every opportunity that I could get, I took it. And
after I bombed, because my bomb was like, I'd been doing it for about 6 months. I was probably like 19 at the time, but I played, you know, bowling alleys and little weird places. But what hurt so bad was that it was at a real comedy club, It was like they had the MC, and then they had the opening act, and then they had me going on right before the feature, and man, it was like. It just made me feel so bad because I was like, wow, like I guess I can do okay when it doesn't matter. But when it matters, that's when I was.
That's the roughest part. It's like bombing in a cabaret is like you can almost get over it. But when you bomb in a comedy club, you feel like, wait a minute, this is what the fuck I do.
Exactly.
And this is the place where they listen to this shit.
Yeah.
And I did the same result as the cabaret. It's like, fuck it.
I know.
It fuck with you psychologically.
Yeah. I look back, and that club, number one, I was probably way too nervous. And two, I was young. I was, you know, imagine you're 19, and then most of the audience was probably like 40 and above. So there was like this disconnect. And a lot of my jokes back then were, you know, kind of like what they are now, but like just more immature, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, like, hey, I'm Kermit the Frog, and I start rapping, and you know, and just like, hey, guys, ever make a prank phone call? And it was just, they couldn't. And then the guy, the MC, would kept going up there doing adult humor, like as far as like things they could relate to. He's like, yeah, I'm divorced, I call my wife Plain F, and they're like, yay. And I went golfing, and I was on the airplane, and I'm like, I'd never even been on a flight yet. You know,
but that's the hardest thing, like, about comedy, even today. Like, you ever notice that young comics, when you see them, they'll go up and they'll be killing? But what people don't understand about comedy is it's fairly new. Stand-up as a genre, on stage, people getting paid, coming into the clubs and seeing, you're talking maybe, what, early 60s, 70s? So, but in between that time, there's been such a dramatic change in media.
Yeah.
Right? So a lot of what a lot of the young kids do today, when you watch them on stage, we done seen that already. We just like, but they'll be ripping the room, and we're like, nah, that's been done. But it's not that they even stealing, it's just because they don't know nothing else.
Right.
And it's a weird dynamic with comedy, because there's no like, there's no, unless you like have somebody pull you to the side when you're young to show you like, hey man, why don't you look at these comics so that you know, do not do this style or this type of material. Be you. And they don't know. So
yeah, I remember, like, you know, comedians would do a joke about, you know, a girl selling flowers in a nightclub. And then another 10 years, the next new comic would be like, hey, guys, ever go to a nightclub? And
yeah.
There's a girl selling, and you're like, wow, you know. Yes. Like at first, you realize, oh, it's just history repeats itself. That's just something that if someone's 21 and they see it for the first time, they're like, this is funny.
Yeah. But it's weird because people will say, well, it's a topic, so we want to hear your approach on that. But I'm like, y'all don't even understand. Like, comedy is one of those genres where that same topic can get beat so much. It's only so many angles you can go.
Yeah.
That's why you have what they consider, some people are considering bad comedy now, because you have people just going, fuck, man, we want something fresh and different.
Yeah.
So to those that grew up in that era and seeing the comics now, they're like, this comedy's bad. But for me, because I was in a comedy store, remember, I worked there for 12 years.
I know, I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
And
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I've seen the different generations of, and the changes. And I learned something about comedy. I said, oh, okay. It's just okay. If I see a young comic, like, it's okay. Just keep going. Just don't get stuck in that. Because you'll get stuck in that. And then when you get 23, 24, 25, or 38, 28, 29, people will be like, okay, what you got now? And then you're stuck. So you got to make sure that you not afraid to take chances and be yourself.
Let me ask you that. When I first met you, I want to say it was at the Comedy Store.
That's what I was going to ask you. I'm like, what was it? Was it the Ha Ha or was it the Comedy Store?
We might have run, you know, cross paths other places, but I first remember hanging with you at the Comedy Store. You know, in the park. At the time, you were working in the parking lot, and you were ripping it on stage. And
I was.
Yeah.
I think that might have been the case too, but I want to say it may have been when I first started doing sound. Nah, you've been around, so I've been seeing you somewhere else. But like when I started doing sound, and you would come and do late night spots. So I don't know if you remember, I used to do the sound in the OR and the Mayor. So it's like when tonight.
Yeah.
Like I was telling the guy on the back, I was like, "This Darren, he got to turn the mic down. He's up there. Turn the mic." And he wasn't in his seat. And I was like, "Darren does this because I know your beats, how you do things." Yeah. I said, "No, Darren got to have the volume to a certain point so that he can't, so they can hear him and feel him." And I'm like, "Man, he's not doing it." Like Ari Basil's show, you did that one, right?
Yep.
And then so like,
oh, that's right.
Yeah. I was doing the sound, so I knew. Okay, Darren's coming up. Let me turn it down for Darren because he liked to beatbox in the mic so it could be crisp and clear and not overshadowing everybody and like hurting your ears. Yeah, I said, man, y'all got to know the comic. You don't know. But that's the problem with places like where we perform today. Not that it was you had a bad set or anything, but it was just like there was a point where I'm like, man, you're messing up his set. You know?
Yeah, because they had the mic too hot at one point.
Yeah, because you told him.
Yeah.
And that's something, like, if you go ask Benny when you talk to him, I said that before you even said it. As soon as I said, they got to turn the mic down. I said, this is ridiculous. I said, man, they don't. And I was looking for the dude. I said, where's the dude? I kept telling Benny, like, where's the dude? Like he kills with this bit right here. Yeah. It's just like.
Yeah. And
So.
So when you, we talked a little earlier, you grew up in Detroit.
Right.
And and what was it like to first move to L.A.? Was it like that? You know, Guns
Total
and Roses,
culture
like,
shock.
Yeah, like, welcome to the jungle, you know.
It was.
You know what I mean? Like,
no, you know what it was more like.
What made you want to come out here? Did you have like an end? Did somebody say?
If you was to step off the airplane and a song would come on when you got off the plane in L.A., that song would come on would be, we are the world. Because it's like, what the fuck? Like, we're in Detroit. unbeknownst to me, I found out we had Mexicans in 1996. I got a fucking year.
Wow.
Wow. Like, yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. Like, 96, and that was 4 years prior to when I moved out here in 2000.
So you just were, Mexicans were kind of new to you when you came out. You were like, wow.
Here's how I found out. This is the craziest shit.
Yeah.
I'm riding downtown with my, well, I call him my little brother, but he's my friend, but my little brother, and I see all these Latino people like, I said, what the fuck is this? And he goes, what the fuck you mean, what is this? And I go, what? Who's all these people? I said, what's going on? He goes, Doc, we have the festivals every year. I say, no, we got the African festival. He say, Doc, wait a minute, you don't never come down for any other festival? I say, no, just for the African American festival. That's when I, to see the bitches. You know? Yeah.
Sorry, ladies, I'm a little bit disrespectful, but to see the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was like, what's going on? He's like, it's Mexican festival this week. And he said, so he said, not only Mexican, he said, look, you see the black people there? And I said, holy shit, I'm gonna check this out. And so then he goes, wait a minute. You do know we have like a area with damn near primarily Mexicans. I go, where? He said, it's called Mexican Village, Doc. And I go, what? I said, that's kind of racist. That's what they call it. But when I go over there, his was crazy. That area is not only Mexicans, it's Asians, Puerto Ricans, blacks, Arab, white. It's like the whole.
Wow.
So that was my first time ever going, what the fuck? Because I went to school with white people, black people, and Arabs that were called Chaldeans. Because Chaldeans, Paul Elliott.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Paul lives 7 Mile and what were he talking about that area? That's where I used to live over there with my grandmother.
Wow.
And I went to elementary school and middle school with all of them. So I had some Arab friends, I had some white friends, and some black friends. So I kind of was a little bit culture, you know, understood culture a little bit.
Yeah.
But when I came to California, I was like, man, what the fuck? Like, this is crazy.
Like, everyone's here. The first time you saw, like, a Samoan person.
Samoan.
You're like, wow, they're so, like, big,
like,
right?
Huge. Yeah. Like, man, I said, what? I was like, how? And like,
yeah.
You, I mean, even, like, when you look at, okay, if you look at somebody from Ukraine, Russia, Yugoslavia, you would think that's the same country. But they're different. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if you call one the other, it's like calling a Salvadorian a Guatemalan. It gets rough. Or a Mexican Puerto Rican. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I mean? Like calling an African a black African.
I remember comedians would be on stage at the Ice House if they were from like New York or something. They'd be like, what's up, man? We got a lot of Puerto Ricans in the house. And they'd be like, boo. Like, no, look at you. Come on, man.
You can't. You have to like be. And that was another thing. You develop a consciousness towards asking questions about where you like, or stating where they from. Because when you first move out here, you automatically just assume everybody's Mexican to a certain point. Oh yeah, what part of Mexico are you from?
You fucking me. You're like, whoa,
Venezuela. Brother? Exactly.
When did you move here? What year?
September of 2000.
Wow.
And then the next year we had 9/11.
Yeah, gosh. So that was the thing. You were like 99. You're like, it's a new millennial. I'm going to move. I'm moving. Then finally in September, you're like, I'm going to do it. And you got out here. And,
I came out here for a family reunion. June of 2000. Mm. And behind my family back, I went and looked for some jobs because I had already wanted to move to L.A. to do comedy. Because you know what I thought? I thought to make it as a stand-up comedian, you had to get movie and TV.
Mm.
But then when I worked at the start working at the Comedy Store, I saw a whole nother level. I said, what the fuck? Who is this guy? Who? Louis C.K.? Missy didn't pass this guy? Why? Missy Shore didn't pass Louis C.K. at the Comedy Store? And he's the biggest name. So it's just like, I learned that, fuck, it's a whole nother avenue and a whole nother thing with comedy. And then I found out about New York. And when I found out about New York, and then I looked at all of Grace, and I'm like, wait a minute. If they didn't come from there, they moved there and did comedy.
Yeah.
Think about it. Louis.
Yeah.
Carlin. All the comedy people from Fox, Jamie Foxx, Mike Epps, Wanda Sykes, Bill Burr, Boston, went down there. Patrice O'Neill, Boston, went to New York. We'll be all day. Rogan, Greg Fitzsimmons. I mean, I don't know if everybody knows
Dane
Greg.
Cook.
But Dane Cook. Chappelle moved from D.C. up there. Martin moved from D.C. to there. Kevin Hart left Philly to go there. It's like, are you fucking, like, New York is like, so I set it up in my mind, I said, I'm going out there. And I went out, started going out there every year from 2015 to 2019
until
Corona happened.
Yeah.
So now I'm like yearning to go back out there.
Wow.
It's crazy.
And then, so when I saw you at the Comedy Store, you said you've been there for 12 years?
Yeah.
And I like what you said on stage. Was one of your jobs, did you actually work as a bus driver in L.A.?
Santa Monica, like Santa I said.
And how long did you do it?
I did it for 3 months.
Wow.
Well, I quit because after the first day of training, I crashed into two police cars. So
oh,
I was
my
like,
gosh.
Yeah, it was fucking so embarrassing, man. That was a sign from God. Like, man, you're going to get off these buses, man. Yeah. You're going to kill somebody. Like, you swipe Santa Monica police cars, bumper hanging.
When you were talking on stage, it just sounded like a crazy job. It sounded like the stuff that you had to like deal with. Like you said a guy put like 11 cents in or something.
Yeah, he put 11 cents in. That's actually a very long story.
Wow.
I just shortened it joke form because I haven't practiced it as story form. So it could be probably even funnier doing it the story form. Because the guy puts 11 cents in.
Yeah.
My supervisor's there.
Oh,
he sees him.
He's on the bus.
Yeah.
And when he said
fuck me, because that's exactly what he said.
Yeah.
F you. And then my supervisor, he was talking to some passengers and he didn't know that was happening.
Wow.
So then he happened to just look up and see him going down the aisle and he goes, hey, did that guy pay you? Like that. And I was like, nah, he ain't paying me. He goes, you, hold on. All right. So they start arguing.
Oh,
he said, you know better. You know better. You should be paying. He goes, man, fuck you, man. He goes, man, I'm on here now. And he was like, okay, but next time, you know better. So I'm like, what's going on? I said, man, I said, he put 11 cents in the box. He said, yeah, he do that every time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So then we do our route.
When you're driving, are you like, constantly like not only looking at the road but kind of like looking at those mirrors up there to see if there's any crazy people on the bus or
you have to pay attention to the passengers because you don't know what's popping off.
Yeah,
so you kind of look up a little bit, check, because it's always drama. It's public transportation and it's, you know, in LA.
Yeah.
So once you get out of Santa Monica and you go, I was going all the way down to Rampart Peak.
Wow.
Bro, it was like, are you kidding? Tested all the time for 3 months straight. I was like, man, I got to get out of this.
Pull up, and like sometimes you just see people like, oh, this is going to be trouble. And you pull up, the door's open, and then nothing happens. You're like, okay, that was good. That was easy.
Yeah.
You're like,
one time I did that. I was like, that was good. That was good. And then my supervisor was like, that was good, huh? And I was like, yeah. He goes, some people snuck on the bus. And I go, what do you mean? He said, I told you to close that back door. You left the back door open, and they snuck on the bus. And I go, are you fucking kidding me? And so then when we got to the stop where they were getting off at, there was two black dudes, unfortunately, right?
Yeah. Like,
and they were like, oh, hey, thanks. He said, them the two dudes. And I go, oh, man, I said, the brothers didn't play me, man. Fucking.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, I wonder... did you see like regular people on the bus now too, or did it mostly seem people that are like?
It was Santa Monica, so you picked up business people.
Oh,
and so like, you know, people in suits and stuff. I got cussed out by a guy, businessman. She said the bus was supposed to have been here, goddamn, 11 minutes ago. And I was like, 11 minutes? I was like, bro, I didn't say it, but in my head, I was like, if you want shit to get here on time, you have to. If you want to get somewhere in time, it's called a car. Like, you use a fucking car if you want to get on time. Like, and this shit ain't predictable. Like, he's like, but what's
sometimes
crazy,
the times. Go ahead.
The supervisor, when he would take over the wheel, on time.
11:36. 11:43.
Man, let me tell you something, man. And that's when I learned. I said, holy shit. I gotta quit soon.
I was like,
these dudes are so fucking great with it. If bus drivers are late, it's only because either they just started or something else popped off.
Mm.
Like, they know how to weave. I mean they whipping it like it was a Yugo or something. Like a tiny car. I said, how the fuck? And he goes, that's how you gotta do it. Boom, 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 boom. Hey, get up. Hey, I told you gotta talking to the customers. They all know him. It was like, oh, this is a whole routine right here. Yeah.
Did he like his job?
He loved it. 39 years.
Wow. Because the way you're describing him, it sounds like he liked it. He's used to it. And he's never, you know, I don't miss a trick. You know, that kind of thing. You know, hey, you got to pay next time.
Right before that accident?
Yeah.
He told me to quit.
Wow. He saw it. He's like, this isn't for you.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. You know what he said? He said, I had got the bus back behind hour and a half. He said, hey, I got to take over right quick so we can catch up. And I was like, we hour and a half behind. He said, I know how to do this. Don't worry about it. And I said, okay. And then while we're driving, he asked me something. And then he looked at me weirdly. He was like, what do you do? And I go, what? What are you talking about? I'm I'm a bus driver. I'm training for this. He goes, no. He said, there's something else going on with you. I can feel it. He said, what is it that you do? And I said, well, I work at the Comedy Store. I'm a comedian. And he said, yeah. He said, tell me about it. When I tell you, I went an hour straight. Just, yeah, and the fucking, and Joe Rogan, and fucking, yeah, and Dave Chappelle. I was like excited telling him. And then when he got us caught up, he said, we had a break, and he said, hey, man, listen, you need to quit. He said, because doing this, you ain't going to be able to do what you do. And he said, you got to hear yourself talk. He said, I'm listening to you. He said, you love this. He said, man, he said, how old are you? At the time I was like 38, 39. He said, you still got that cushion to where you can make some things happen. He said, quit. And even if you have to go homeless, just do it. You'll see something will change and it'll show you something. He said, but you got to put it in right now because you're going to regret it. And he said, don't quit, because he loved being a bus driver.
Yeah.
He was like, I took this 39 years in. I'm making this much money. Yeah. I get this kind of overtime. I'm straight. You know what I'm saying?
And he saw like, the light in you come on. You're like, comedy. Oh, man.
Yeah. I was excited. And that was, but it was just weird, because here's the weirdest thing is he wasn't my supervisor. He was my trainer. My supervisor, the superintendent actually that run the whole bus company.
Yeah.
He was training all of us, training me for some reason, whatever. We went to McDonald's on a break. He asked me about comedy because something came up about comedy. Oh, he mentioned like a joke, and he was like, this guy named Carlos said one time. And I said, oh yeah, I know Carlos. Because he worked at a store, not personally, but I was like, I know him personally based on a store.
Yeah.
So he was like, oh yeah, what, how? And then I started telling him, and he was like, what's going on? So I just started to whoa, 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 whoa. And he goes, you need to quit. And I go, what?
Yeah.
So it was like, I felt it. And when I swiped them police cars, that's when I was like, that's it.
You're like, that's it, man.
That's it. It was like, I can't put people's lives in danger.
Where did you go from the bus, from that job? Did you just go full-time at the Comedy Store?
I always was there at the Comedy Store.
Oh, the whole, okay.
So what was crazy is, what really bothered me, like a week before I quit, Vicky Barbalat, she called me. Because I used to go on the road sometimes with her, and she would let me feature with her some once in a while, whatever.
Yeah.
So she was like, ah, I got this nice band gig. I want you to come feature with me. Just gonna pay this much, boo woo. And I was like, oh man, I picked up this job at the bus. She goes, oh, Doc. Oh, okay, well, you know, like I said, it's still on table for you if you want it. I said, no, Vicky, give it to somebody else, because I can't even do it. I worked that day.
Yeah.
And then it really ate me up, man. And I learned from there, like, and then, like, once I had that accident, I was like, nah, man, I gotta go for it. Even if, and I don't have no wife and kids like you. Yeah. So I was like, I ain't married, I ain't got no kids, I ain't even got a steady girl. So I said, man, I need to go on and just do it. It don't fucking matter what happens to me.
Right.
I die, oh, it's gonna be some few people, cousins, whatever, who gives a fuck, right?
Like, I gotta go for it.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, I'm full-time at the Comedy Store. That's what I'm going to do. And was there a point, being there 12 years, was there a point when you're like, okay, I need to step away?
That's what it was, after the 12 years.
Oh, at the
12 years. Yeah, at the 12-year mark.
I talked to a few of these the guys that are there now, and they're like, they're in the park, you know, I think they rotate the parking lot jobs.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're like, yeah, you know, I've been here for 10 years. I don't know if I'm, should I keep doing, or is it, or should I quit? I don't know. Like, they have that, that's the things they think about. You know.
Because, well, the problem with the store is the problem with me. And for me, on up, and probably maybe a little bit, maybe KD, but KD was there before me. Remember KD?
Yeah.
That died in Vegas?
Yeah.
Still trying to say something. Well, so KD.
Oh, yeah.
KD is who trained me for the lot. But all of us were Mitzi's, right?
Mitzi Shore.
Mitzi Shore's. So she was okay with us working there. Now, because she was suffering with mental illnesses such as Alzheimer's and dementia, she was getting mad, and she used to get mad at KD, and she used to want KD fired. Mm. And then when I started working there, it got to a point where she was confusing me with KD. I'm like, I thought I told you to fire the black guy.
Like,
no. That's, that guy is 5'3", and KD, that guy is 6'1". It's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was like one of those situations, but when she focused on me, when she would see me like at the door or something, it was always cordial. It was always, okay, yeah, that's all right. That's all I'm talking about. So, but the regime change is what affects the people. So you got her, then Tommy came, then Adam. Now you got
Emily.
Emily.
Yeah.
So it's like people are suffering from instability of a pure talent coordinator. Because it happened with the improv over the past, what, 10 years?
Yeah.
With Eric, then Rita, then
Paige.
No, Jamie Flam.
Oh yeah, that's right, Jamie.
Then Jamie, and then Paige, and now Rita again.
Rita again, yeah.
Yeah, it's so that instability, whereas the factory, for the most part, has always been Jamie.
Yeah.
The Ha Ha Club, for the most part, has always been Terry, but now, from what I'm kind of understanding, it's Jack Jr., but I don't even know how Jack Jr. doing it, because he's on the road now.
Right.
So it's like instability at a club. Like, you always had Comedy Magic House, you always had Rich.
Yeah.
You had Jans at...
The Ice House. And now it's you know, Alley. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. See, I ain't been over to Ice House in so long. You know who used to book me? Sean Sullivan.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And now he's at the Improvs.
Right. Now he's at the Improvs. So the last time I see him, Doc, you need to come over here and do the open mic.
So let me ask you this.
God, this is just painful right now.
I know.
Damn.
He's like, I saw you at the Cabaret years ago in Detroit. Dang it. No. Let me ask you this. So a guy like Sebastian Maniscalco, huge star now, huge star. You knew him when he was before star.
Yeah, when he first got past at the store, and he was like, so you see how his set is mainly on his pet peeves or his anger.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Tours. Viewing the world.
Aren't you embarrassed?
Yeah. But you know, it's, and I wouldn't even say it's pet peeves, it's common things that all of us get mad about.
Right.
So that's what makes him strikingly great as a comedian, because we're like, yeah, them little small details. I'm fucking, hey, don't get in a goddamn pool with band-aids on your toes and shit like that. Everybody's like, man, if you get in that guy, even black people, we're like, man, you better get your motherfucking, you know what I mean? It's so those are little small minor details that he pays attention to. He's like Seinfeld. R-rated, because I won't say X-rated, because he still can do any wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to see Sebastian go, I got a good one for you. He did the Wild West Comedy Tour.
Yeah.
Him, Brett Ernst,
Vince Vaughn.
Vince Vaughn, and John Caparillo.
Yes.
Okay. So I thought that all of them were doing well because they were headlining. Right? Because Cap started getting really popular as headliner. Yeah. Brett wasn't, and then I met Amir. He didn't get to where he wanted to be, but Amir was getting things here and there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He got on the show, Sullivan's show, with
Steve Byrne,
right? I used to be a background on that. You could see me in there drinking a little beer, fake beer in the back.
That's cool. And you thought they were all headliners?
Yeah, I thought he was making money as a headliner. And his special head was already out. The first one, Aren't You Embarrassed?
Oh, okay.
So I was like, okay, Sebastian is fucking doing it. He's in the OR hallway, original room hallway, waiting to go up. Bobby Lee's on stage. I'm coming out the parking lot. I see him. Hey, Sebastian. I said, man, it's fantastic. I think it might be about 2011. Man, this is... You're doing great, selling out. I said, yeah, no, I ain't say selling out. I said, no, you're doing great, headlining. And he goes, what, Doc? What are you talking about? And I go, what? What do you mean? He goes, Doc, it's not what you think it is. He's like, Doc, sometimes I only have 20 people in the audience. He's like, man, nobody knows who the fuck I am. I said, even after all this other shit you did? He goes, yes. He goes, Doc, it ain't the same. Then Bobby's on stage. He's going, see him? You want to be like him? He sells out. He said, that's what you want. He said, man, don't think, Doc, do not look at what nobody else is doing. He said, it's not what you think it is. Mm-hmm. And I said, fuck. And that advice and one other piece that he had gave me some years later made me go, okay, this game is different.
What was the other piece? Do you remember?
The other piece was,
this is once he was really started really being popular. It's like 2016. This is when he was at this point selling out theaters and possibly the stadiums at that point.
Yeah.
This was crazy. 2011, 2016. That's when he made like $19 million in Forbes. Remember they put it in an article on Forbes? Google that if you put it up. He made like nine. And I'm like, fuck, this is incredible. But he's performing and in the OR. You know the picture window? The window outside that you can see the bar and the front patio?
Yeah, right next to the stage.
There you go, right next to the stage. So he's performing. There's a girl that's constantly looking out that window while he's on stage. But he only been up there like 2-3 minutes because I love watching his set. So I'm just in there where like, hurry up before I have to get cussed out for not being on the lot.
right.
So he doing his thing. And then after like 3 minutes, he look at the girl. He goes, what are you looking at? What's going on out there? He said, you've been looking out since I've been on stage. And then he said, he leaned over, he looked out the window. He goes, you know what? Never mind. So he turns to the crowd angrily. Mm. And he goes, everybody, I don't know all of you can see, but most of you can. You see this big window right here? You see all these people that's on the patio? It's the same goddamn people every week, every night. Same comics hanging out. He say, you know what they're asking themselves? How to make it in Hollywood. By getting off this goddamn patio, look at these motherfuckers. So the crowd starts laughing because he's angry. Yeah. I'm in the back like, God damn it. So I'm in the lot. He gets off stage. I had to go back to the lot. I couldn't watch his set. And I said, Sebastian, I said, man, I'm glad you said that because I've been telling people that. And he said, Doc, he said, they're like zombies. He said, they're here till 2 o'clock when it's closing. You remember how it'll be closing? It'll be like 30 people on the patio just drinking.
The music playing and all that. Yeah.
He said, they call that networking. He said, that's not what it is. He said, Doc, if a place isn't putting you up, fuck them. Find your way. He said, but hanging out here, he said, how many you seen get? It's only a couple that get through. He said, the rest of them, they'll never make it because they don't understand that's not what it's about. Mm. And I said, fuck. And I was like, yeah, because if you really think about it, even the years you've been there, how many people out of 100%, what would be the percentage that you say that got in the club from hanging out?
I don't even know. I would say, is it 0%?
I mean, we would say 1%, maybe 2%. I mean, yeah, it's rare for you to hang out.
I mean, you can get in by being like doorman and the staff. That's a way to get in.
But that's the build-up way, though.
Yeah, that's the build-up way.
That's the greatest thing
but
about
it. Just hanging around, like being
like all the rest of them. Yeah, that's what he was talking about, though. Yeah. The comics and all of them just hanging out on the patios, partying, thinking, if I'm cool with this person, and they would be there at 2 o'clock. Yeah. Because a big part of that was Tommy was telling them that. And to some degree,
you gotta come hang out. You gotta hang out.
To some degree, it worked for some people because he actually had the ones he wanted and he had in mind. So it worked for a couple of them. But the majority of them, nah. But it was misleading for the rest of them because they thought that was what they needed to do.
Yeah. I heard somewhere a director told me once, he goes, nothing good happens after midnight.
Right.
And I thought about that. You know, I mean, there's exceptions every now and then, but for the most part, like you said, you just. If you're just hanging around until 2 in the morning, night after night, it's like, what do you, you know?
I'm going to show you a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
Fallouts.
Fallouts.
There you go. What was Fallouts? What time was Fallouts?
Yeah, at the end of the night.
There you go.
So that's a good thing.
Yes. Yeah. So she understood that.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing popping off. People tired. They didn't had all the comedy from 9 about 11 because she said people can truthfully only stand comedy for about 2 hours.
Right.
She said after that, they done. No matter how funny you are, they're like, I'm out. Unless Chappelle would come in. Chappelle was the only motherfucker. You'd be like, hell. Yeah. That'd be 10 people. Hour later. Pack. You're like, hell, it's 1 o'clock. I used to be mad. I ain't gonna lie. used to be that motherfucker in the 3 o'clock jam pack room. I'm like, how? Go home.
No, they just text, they tweet. Oh my gosh, look who's here.
God, it's crazy with that guy.
Yeah, Fallouts, you guys without boring you too much, it's when comedians at the end of the night, they'll sign up and they'll be like, okay, Doc, you want to go up and do some time? And then after the whole show's over, and that's great because that's the comedians that have the fire in them. They're going to go down there and get on stage and work on something. And comedy has changed so much, even from the time that you were there. Like, now people are like filming themselves and maybe they get that clip and it goes viral. That could actually change their lives. Back in the day, they really weren't doing that, right?
That's true. But that's the thing about what social media has done, but it also has that instant gratification has smothered them. It smothered their true development, right? Because it's like how
You got your LeBron James, and then you got all the other guys who got out of left high school to go and never won anything and never became anything.
Yeah.
So it's like that part is really risky. And if you believe that and that's what you want to do, I'd be like, hey, man, do your thing. But I'd be like, get ready. Because once you get that shot and you ain't ready, you can make good money, because we all want to live and make good money. But I don't think people, especially people who never been around money, they don't understand that unless you're making consistent hundreds of thousands per year or millions per year, you make that, say if you make a quick $2 million.
Yeah.
You don't make anything else after that. That shit tap out so goddamn fast.
Yeah.
You understand?
You know, I have a friend that does the podcast sometimes, John DiResta. He had his own sitcom. He was in Miss Congeniality 1 and 2, bunch of movies, got, you know, big fat residual checks. But he said he was only really rich, if you could call it that, for 3 years.
Yeah.
You know? He's like, he used to rent a big house in the hills. Mm-hmm. Because I used to leave the pool, I would heat it just in case I wanted to go swimming. And then, of course, all that stuff went away. Everything got canceled. And then he said, everyone on the show, they go on to other jobs. And now he's like, ooh, what do I do? And it's like, boom, the money went. He goes, you still have to put gas in your car. You still have to pay the bills. And all that stuff ended for him back in like 2002.
That's the thing I dread about Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about, what's one of your favorite sitcoms?
Back in the day, Three's Company.
Three's Company.
Yeah.
Those, other than John Ritter, what are the other ones doing? That's the hardest thing. If show is successful.
Oh, you're right. I think Suzanne Summers did good, but other than
in
that.
In an area
where
you won't get robbed because they know you for being famous, but you ain't really making that kind of money.
Yeah.
And you didn't, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you're living in an area to be safe, and that money dries out because you're paying so much and you're not the star.
Right.
But you gotta be over here, because if you live over here, they're gonna try to rob you because they're poor. It's a weird dynamic
Even when I would do stand-up, like on TV, you know, like on BET's Comic View, because they would air it so much, they didn't pay much. But I remember one time I was just walking down the street, and this guy had pulled over, he was doing something, and he saw me, and he goes, hey, you're a comedian. And he goes, I know you. And I don't think he even knew my name. And he goes, dude, what are you doing walking? Like, it just tripped him out.
Yeah.
Like, he had just seen me the night before.
Because they see you on a platform so big, and they automatically assume, this guy is making millions or hundreds of thousands. He's funny.
He should be in a Mercedes, a BMW. This guy's just going for, I was just walking for exercise, but
it's a wake-up call. You see it in every genre, though. You see it with NBA players, bench players. The best thing about bench players is they're not as famous, so most people don't know them, so they can kind of be under the radar. But like I said, if you on a TV show or something like that, and you're on a supporting cast, and that show is a hit, they think all of y'all is making, with the exception of there's Big Bang Theory and Seinfeld. Where those
I got to be on a movie with Master P back in the day, and I remember in between scenes, he was telling his agent to book 4 Southwest airline tickets to go to New Orleans, and then afterwards, I go, hey, is it weird, like, when people see you on, like, Southwest, like, wow, there's Master P, because Forbes just said, like, he made $54 million.
Yeah.
And I remember he said something like, no, because I always fly commercial. He goes, when you brag about flying private, and then if they see you fly commercial, like, oh, he fell off.
Yeah.
He goes, but I always, you know, I'm a man of the people, Southwest Airlines.
Yeah, because if you put up a bravado, Future just said that on an interview, like, I don't really like to quote these dudes, but Future, he was like, he was talking about how he had to keep up this lifestyle.
Wow.
Because he's like, man, I'll rap about this. I got to keep living it. And it's like, oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
So he's fortunate that he was able to sell his music catalog lately. But even then, it's like, what else do you have?
I was going to say, maybe he could change his topics.
Yeah, it's the same thing over and over. But
I like going for walks and seeing statues. I like doing free stuff. You know?
You can't do that. He'll lose the audience comedian. Yeah, like, wait a minute, we want to hear about pills and women.
Exactly.
It's like crime. It's like, that's all
about. I like looking up and looking at the clouds and all the free shit.
Yeah. It's
So you saw Sebastian transform.
Yeah.
And,
it's man, you know, all of those guys pop.
Yeah.
To see them pop, even whether they make millions or hundreds of thousands. Like Caparillo. I think Caparillo probably making millions now. But not like Sebastian, but very well. Selling out theaters, you're making millions. Chris D'Elia, all of these guys, to see them go from bang, bang. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know.
And you know what's interesting? And this
Cat
is,
Williams and Kevin Hart, same thing.
Oh, Cat, I know, man.
That's crazy. Remember?
Crazy.
Like,
yeah.
Like, and he didn't even, in none of the clubs, had his own room at the Hollywood Casino. We going over there, me and, I don't know, remember, you know, Maurice King and,
yeah.
you know Henry Coleman.
Yeah.
All of us used to go over there, me, him, Walter Jordan, all of us would go. Well, I used to go with them, and then we go hang out. And what's crazy is I forgot who Cat was. And so when Cat got famous, and he came up to the Comedy Store for the first time when I was working there, just to hang out, well, the first time I seen him hanging out there.
Yeah.
And he walked up to me. He's like, what up, bro? And then he shook my hand. I was like, man, Cat cool to the motherfucker. He just spoke to me like he knew me.
Yeah, it's weird. Same thing with me. He goes, Mr. Carter, how are you today, sir? Because he remembers me from the Bay Area, you know, which is where I don't remember him. I kind of do, but I kind of don't. Because I think he used to wear weird hats. And then I'm like, okay, maybe I remember. But I remember there was a promoter that put us on a show, and they had him host. It was in Bakersfield at the Fox Theater. He was hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, he's great, man. I love Cat Williams. He's so funny. He's great. Yeah. I got to hang out with him one night in Miami. That's a different – we'll tell that story on another podcast. But it was a great – man, it was just – it was very cool.
Man.
And then – okay, so about a year ago or something, I was on the internet – and I saw you were part of a big podcast with Bobby Lee.
Bobby Lee, Bad Friends, and Andrew Santino.
How did that – are you still on there? And
no, I'm not on there no more. I left on my own merits.
Uh-huh.
Same thing, man. People are like, no, man, that's the thing. But it's like when you
– before you get into leaving, how did that go about that you got into – because you knew the two guys?
You know
Bobby.
The Comedy Store.
Yeah.
You know, like I used to go and host – shows with Bobby when I was like coming up in the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
So he would let me host, and we had always had like a relationship like that. So it, I mean, even for me, it was weird for him to call me and ask me to be on it, because I was like, what's going on? Like, what?
Yeah.
I said, okay, let me see.
Hey, I'm doing this podcast.
Yeah,
you want to come in and just kick in and be like
someone
a third
I got, yeah.
That's cool.
I was like, man, what is this? And I was like, you want me to, but then when I got on there, it was like, oh, wait a minute. I'm supposed to play the dumb guy on here? This ain't... So I'm like, you know what? All right, let's go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so I enjoy that part of it, but I wasn't going to stay that guy. Everybody who knows me, like, that ain't Doc. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the fans don't know that.
Yeah.
But I'm like, this guy Doc's dumb, and they just be dogging him. They in my inboxes. Hey, man, they got to stop bullying you. And I'm like, easy, fellas.
It's coming.
It's coming.
Yeah, it's like wrestling. It's
yeah.
Not really, yeah.
It was like, nah, y'all don't know me like that. So I was like, let me... do what I do.
I never, to truth be told, I didn't really watch the episodes. But I saw that you were on there, and I was like, happy for you. I was like, oh, cool, Doc. And then today I knew it was an interview, and I went on your, I think your YouTube, because I think you started the podcast.
Yeah, for bad. My own little, I didn't really want to do it, but I left so abruptly. I felt I had to address the last episode.
Because somebody on the thing, there was one that was, you were telling a story about taking care of your mother's sister, I think, the 103-year-old woman.
My great-aunt.
Your great-aunt.
Yeah, I forgot to check the...
It was a little clip. It was like a five-minute clip, and it was really good. And people all in the comment section were like, Doc is great. We love Doc. He should start a Patreon. I'll pay for it, blah, blah, blah. So
right.
I don't know if you've done that yet, but
no.
You can tell that people support you. They want to see you
blow up.
I mean, you got a huge fan base, it looks like, you know?
Yeah, people kind of like... Well, you saw I had a few people here.
Were,
you know, so on. I said, man. And
that's
they
cool.
were, like, wanting to take the pictures. So, and it's been like this. Every show I do now, there's people stopping me because of that podcast. So I'm thankful for that.
Yes.
But it still isn't like they're screaming my name.
Right.
You remember Gerard Carmichael, right?
Yeah.
So one day, me, Gerard, Eric Griffin, and Ian Edwards, we was all having lunch somewhere. And... I forgot what we was talking about.
Screaming the name or something?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm talking about me and Gerard. That we all of us were talking about at the moment. But whatever we were talking about, it had something to do with the comedy. And then I asked him, he said, how do you feel about how people make it and take it off? He said, well, this is how it goes. He said, I'm going to tell you using you. He said, at first when I came around, I used to hear people like kind of whispering your name. He said, now, when I go places, when you're not there, I hear them talking about you. He said the next thing after that is the screams. When the people start screaming your name, like
whisper, talking, screaming.
Yeah, he said that's when it all start happening for you. Mm. So that could happen Hollywood way or without Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you've seen, like, Matt Rife.
Right, I was just going to say.
Selling out without Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when people start, it don't even matter. Now, he's not famous to the world, but he's selling out even in the UK now.
And then behind the scenes, you know, he's getting millions of dollars.
Millions,
deals,
and, yeah.
You know, I was at the Improv one night, and this young girl, it was almost like he's like Elvis of comedy, or you know, Bieber, whoever. There was a grandma, and she had her granddaughter there, and her granddaughter was probably late teens, and she had his concert t-shirt on with like his show dates and stuff, and the grandma was asking Kirill Sultanovich, another comedian, she's like, is Matt Rife up there? Is there any way my granddaughter could meet him and get a photo? And Kirill was like, let me check, you know, and Matt had already left, but it, just to see that, I was like, wow, that's huge. And then I don't care, I look at it, I think it's cool, because I'm not even, it's like, I don't, you know, they say comparison is a thief of joy. But I have noticed some comedians that are kind of like, oh, Matt Rife is blowing up. Oh. And I'm like, dude, it's not like it's one or the other. I mean, you know.
You have to ask yourself, too. Like, Matt is genuinely funny. And the thing is like, so when I was at the store, I used to host for Eric Griffin when Matt Rife had the feature.
Yeah.
And I was kind of upset about it. I'm like, what? You knew me before him. Why is he featuring? And then one day he just told me, he said, man, look, Doc. He said, I know you probably, because I didn't even ask him, because I'm not the type of person, you pick who you pick, but in the heart, you're like, I need the 20 minutes and the money, man, not the 30 minutes and the money, not this 15-minute little host in every show. But he was like, Doc, he said, you'll see. He said, I have him hosting. He said, I have him featuring. I just want you to tell you that because I'm not disrespecting you. And I was like, because in my head, I'm like, disrespecting is your shit. But he was just saying that based on because he knew me. And he said, but he said, most of these women here, when I announce that he's with me, the shows get more packed because of him. So I seen Matt when he was developing and his comedy was like young, you know, white guy. 16, young,
he was like 16, handsome. 17, 18.
No. He was, this 20. When he was on, he was already on Wilding Out. It was like the beginning.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So he was getting really, he was getting on then. And I'm talking, bro. You like he was the headliner, Eric, and it was like they wanted to see both of these guys. And I was on the side selling merch. Like, man, fuck y'all.
Yeah.
So like,
dude, when Eric Griffin featured for me. I remember I took him to Vicksburg, Mississippi. We did a casino.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I saw him blow up, and it's kind of like, wow.
But you know, just think about this. This is what's even more crazy. Eric don't sell out like Matt. How much of a mind blowing fuck is that? But.
Yeah.
We don't look like Matt. That motherfucker's handsome. It's like, you motherfucker.
His handsomeness kind of is, well, his physique, to me, it just came out of nowhere. Because I don't really know him. But, I mean, I'd see him around.
To being the man that he is.
Yeah, I'd see him around because he kind of had a boyish face. Like, oh, that young kid. And then one day he was like, I saw him, some promoter had used some photos. I'm like, that guy's like a bodybuilder. Like, where the hell did this guy? You know what I mean? He's like a grown-up. Like, he looked, you know what I mean? Like, he looked like he had, like, biceps like a superhero. I'm like that. Where the hell did this come from? I even told him that. I go, dude, how did this happen?
It's like one of those. But he said it in his, the first special I seen. I didn't see his one. He released the second one. I think I might have saw a few minutes of the second. But he talked about that, how, like, he grew into this guy. He said he wasn't this guy like that, and then it just all of a sudden boom, and women, I mean, dude, like seriously, he wasn't even popular when he was with Eric featuring, like, but he was like popular without being as popular, like, even right now you can say it to his name to a bunch of people, they're not gonna know Matt.
Yeah,
but
he
has this frenzy. And if you ask me, I always looked at myself and said, I want to be like Kat and these guys and blah blah blah. But I'll take Matt Rife's. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, are you kidding me?
I watch his videos. He's funny, man. Like, his crowd work and the way he interacts. And he's like, hey, let me try.
Yeah, he genuinely has fun. And the crowd has fun with him. And, like, I went and I said, let me look at some of these comments. And I'm like, let me see what these dudes saying. And you hear the dudes. Man, this is unfair. This guy is handsome and he's funny. This is just like, fuck. This guy's like, he even got the dudes. Like, I'm coming to see this guy. It's like, that's what you want. You want... Despite what you look like, they still think you're funny.
Yeah.
And they love what you do because they can think you're funny, Don't come around.
Let's do some rapid fire questions before we wrap up. Okay, so do you eat fast food?
All the time.
And what's your favorite?
McDonald's.
McDonald's. Oh, really? Still? Because I went through a period where I got, because I have a kid. When he was really little, I was like, oh, I'm so tired of McDonald's. But I think I would, they said that they've improved their McDonald's game. Has it gotten better?
I don't know if it got better, but that app game, you get them deals, you buy so much, you get these points. That's the way I use it. And then like the Dodgers win, you get free fries, and I'm like, I'm about to go on to McDonald's.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's why I fuck with it. I'll be over there, that app be the good.
That's funny. I was starving when I landed in Florida, and the guy driving me was like, I got the McDonald's app, and he like hooked me up with a bunch of stuff. I was like, thank you.
Oh, hilarious.
So that was actually really good. Okay, Taco Bell or Del Taco?
Taco Bell.
Ugh.
Del Taco is just so disgusting to me. I don't know how it's trash.
Yeah.
It's like the diarrhea of all, you know, Taco Bell. Anyway, go ahead.
What was your first concert you went to?
MC Hammer.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice.
Him, yeah. Boyz II Men. You remember when Boyz II Men manager got killed? I don't know if you
I do remember that.
Yeah, that was at the same. They didn't show up because their manager got killed and they were performing in Detroit.
Wow.
So, but I got to see Hammer kill it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Only rap concert I've ever been
to. That was the only rap concert you went to?
The only rap concert I've ever been to. Much as I like gangster rap, I would never go.
I wouldn't want to.
Man, especially in Detroit. It was wild after the concert. Yeah.
That's the thing, too. I always like, I went to a Metallica movie. You know, they had the record, what do you call it, the listening party. Yeah. I went there with my son 2 weeks ago, and I was like, exactly. yeah, you know, and it was like, I was kind of like, because I'd never really been to a metal concert before, so I was like, but I mean, it's a movie theater, so it was kind of like, it's funny because everybody's wearing like black t-shirts and metal, just like you would imagine, leather jackets, you know, and I'm sitting there with like a polo shirt, you know, like, you know what I mean? I have my glasses so I can see the screen good, and I because it's a movie, I got like popcorn and stuff. I look like a total nerd bringing my son, you know, he had a couple of hot dogs, and, you know, and people were drinking to the left of us, and then people drinking to the right, and we're just sitting there eating popcorn, and it was fun, so. But yeah, I remember I saw I got to open for the New Kids on the Block, you know, back in the, back in like 90.
Was
it was great, man. New Kids, they were young. I was young. I was around their age. And there was a,
comedy?
I did comedy. I'd been doing comedy for 3 months and it was in Fresno, my hometown.
Shit.
And the promoter did a thing where they had people audition. So there was band, maybe because it was easy setup and easy takedown. It was just me, you know, and I was supposed to do like 5 minutes. And at the time, I used to do, like, this cartoon rapping thing where I'd be like, you know, I'll just do a little bit of it. I go, boom, boom. Well, blows me down. I couldn't be hipper. Shiver me timbers. I'm a Chippendale stripper. Well, my name is Bullwinkle. I am a moose. Give me the mic and I'll cut loose because me so horny. You know, and it's just Kermit the Frog and I'm covered in green. Miss Piggy is fat. That's F-A-T, but it's my prerogative. Like the Bobby Lee, you know, or the Bobby Brown song.
Old school.
I do all this old school. But at the time, it was hot. It was happening. So, it was my big closer because I did comedy in high school. And so I kind of had a closer, like that would kill. And like I said earlier, when I played for the people that were in their 40s, the comedy club, they didn't really think it was that funny. You know, they're not, that wasn't their world, you know.
Yeah.
But opening for the New Kids was awesome. It was exciting. I bombed, but I knew that they were just kids, so I didn't really hurt me. You know, I was they wanted to see the New Kids.
Yeah,
but I remember before the show,
they
were like, okay, we're opening the doors. And all these like 10-year-old, 12-year-old girls were just like getting as close to the stage. The whole play. I saw the arena go from empty to like 3,000 people. And I remember, I'll never forget, the song they were playing was MC Hammer. Turn this mother out. And it was just like so exciting. I never heard that song. I heard I heard Can't Touch This, but I hadn't heard that song. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
It blew me away. So that was your first concert?
First concert. Wow. Man. He had a whole, back then, it was like 40 people on the stage.
Oh, yeah.
Mayhem.
And the MC Hammer pants.
Yeah,
and
the pants.
The dance, the Chinese typewriter, I think it was called.
Bro, I mean, I'm thinking 40 might even be an understatement. That Mark Twain statue is creepy as hell when you just take a glance and you don't know.
I know, you think someone, I know we're still here at dark.
Yeah.
Okay, next quick question. What is something that you've rediscovered, like you used to, you know, it's something you used to find joy in, it's something used to make you happy, and then you're like, wow, I haven't done this in a while, and then you enjoy doing it again.
Outside of comedy?
Yeah, outside of comedy.
Learning about science. science.
Science.
Yeah. Like I, you know, you hear of Einstein, right? As a kid, and then back when I was a kid, I actually, when I went to college, my major, I dropped out, but was computer science. So I was like into tech and I was into science and stuff like that. But I got into some other things and I wound up not wanting to do it. I got bored with it actually. But when I, as I got older, I started really learning more about science. And when, unfortunately, when my mother was sick and she was passing away, I really was like diving into medicines, and I was going into NCBI, National Biological Biotechnology, all that, looking up information and going into Harvard Institute, looking up, trying to see however way I could help her. So like with that, I started watching more and I said, where is this guy Einstein? I said, I know what he did, but I don't know what he did.
Yeah.
And then I fucking got it when I found out. And I, it took me a long time to like keep watching and keep watching and keep looking at stuff to really get it. And once I got it, I said, fuck, shit. It's, man, it's a game changer for me, man. I can't look at life no different. To the point, right before my mother passed away, I said, man, I said, you know, Einstein said that everything is one and that everything is already done and everything is set, past, present, and future. And then I said, what do you feel about that? She said, he's right. And I go, what do you mean? She said, because if you look at me, I'm always egg healthy. I'm the top earner out of all the sisters. I got a master's degree. I make over six figures. I've always took care of myself. She said, but somehow I'm the one that got cancer and my sisters eat like shit. And she said, and I got a cancer that when I went through the family history, I didn't tell you this, but I did. I'm the first woman to ever get this particular cancer. And she said, that's not by bad habits or anything. She said, that's because it's set that way. And she said, whatever's your time is your time. And that just because it's happening, it don't make it bad, but it don't make it good either. She said, it's just different from what we want and what we expect in life. So it was like that kind of triggered me more, and I want to learn science and learn about quantum and all this shit. I'll be like, entanglement, give me more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm constantly watching and reading. I got fucking physics books at home. I ain't finished them, but.
And that sometimes I buy a book just to look at the cover, you know?
Yeah. Just to feel important. Yeah, don't even read the motherfucker. Hey, that's fucking, that right there. That's Interstellar right there.
Yeah, that's cool. You go to have you checked out the Griffith Observatory yet?
Nope.
That's something you could do here. It's in L.A. and you could go there and look at the stars. And all
I know
that.
A lot of people have talked about it. I was actually talking to me and one of the coworkers at Amazon talking about going to JPL, the Jet Propulsion for NASA at Caltech and do the tour.
Yeah.
But they had stopped doing the tour because of COVID. So we hoping something happens and it open up. And I actually know a couple people dealing with NASA, so I might try to still get something going for myself because I really want to go.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
If you had the opportunity to get on a rocket, would you?
Nah.
You know how they had we're going to put the first comedian in space. I think Jamie did that at the.
In
sync, right? Didn't Lance Bass or one of those guys want to go on a.
If the rocket moves exactly and it has the exact technology of these goddamn UFOs, I'm on there.
Yeah.
You can put me on one of them motherfuckers, I'm cool.
Yeah.
Shit, the way they've been describing these motherfuckers, the military, I'm like, what? Hell no. Like, people ignore. They're like, UFOs, aliens. Like, no. But y'all still got to pay attention to what they're saying with these vehicles, dude. They don't even get it. Fucking dead hover. Instantaneous acceleration. The fucking pilot said he was following behind it. They hit it with the radar. It was doing 8,000. Then it did a right angle at 8,000. I'm like, who the fuck is this? Whoa. We need this shit, man. And then people, man, I'd be all day with that shit, man. But I'm like, I'm so obsessed with the tech of what they're saying, the abilities of this, that I when I hear SpaceX and NASA, I cringe now. They be like, the ship blew up. Like, SpaceX fucking shit blew up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Here these motherfuckers dropping from, not only with the battleship in the Pacific Ocean, Princeton and Nimitz, they said it popped in at 80,000, stopped at 28,000 at a standstill. then dropped straight into the ocean in 0.7 seconds. It was clocked doing 24,000 miles per hour in 0.7 seconds. The Earth is only 24,000 miles round. That means that vehicle, well, a little over 24,000.
What was that? A UFO did that, or one of the SpaceX?
UFO. Oh, wow.
UFO. That's what, and that's where that's what people not understanding. I'm like, listen. Even though we can't do nothing about it, you can at least be, like, have inquiry about it. Because it's like, who is this? Like, you're talking 0.7 seconds? Can you wrap around the world? Changes the whole game. Semis out the door. Freight out the door. You're talking about vehicles that could move shit. You're talking about, hey, you want to go to fucking California? Of course, they're going to regulate the speed. Because even like they said, one of them, they clocked 3,000 and something miles. Meaning it could go from here to Washington, D.C., they said, in like point something or one sec, whatever it was, right?
Yeah.
And my whole thing is like, man, who is this? Dead hover, don't lose no wind. Not only that, it dropped in the ocean, so they said it can do space, air, and underwater. The military submarines been clocking them underwater.
Wow.
How the fuck do you not get excited? I'm like, who the fuck? If it's China, we need to talk to them. Like, man, can you just put these at LAX for a minute at least? Let us fucking travel.
Yeah.
This shit is amazing, dog.
Sounds like you're excited. Hey, man. Remember how that bus driver guy, or they told you got to, now it seems like you should, you know, maybe quit comedy and get into space.
Yeah, I would, man.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
I actually was like, well, that's why I got the physics books, because I started doing, like, physics equations, start learning about scalars and vectors and speed and all this, and how to do the equations, because I got like a workbook. And it's a lot of work. That's what makes physics hard. It's not about you got to be so smart to do it. It's just memory.
Being disciplined.
Yeah, it's very, 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 and it's a long time. Like, I find myself having to go back to chapter one, I'd be like, God damn it, wait a minute, okay, the displacement and the vectors and displacement and speed and what, it's fucking, you gotta remember all these equations. You know, okay, what? Gravity is 9.83 per second, per this, like, fuck.
You know what you'd be perfect for? The Joe Rogan Experience, you know, because you know
somebody
Joe.
Told me that.
Yeah, and he loves this kind of stuff. And the name of his comedy club is called The Mothership.
Yeah, but he's had way more qualified people than I could ever be this. And plus, Joe is like one of those guys where his podcast, like, I don't really care to do it. You know what I mean? Like, for me, because I know Joe from the store. It's his podcast is one of those things where it's like, if I got famous and he was like, come do it, I'd be like, nah. But if he came to me right now, I'd be like, okay, I'll do it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because it's got that kind of big point now where it's like, he can only have like superstar people. And so to me, I don't really care to do podcasts that much, bro.
Yeah, I got you. Dude, thanks for doing this one. In the park at dark.
Yeah, I turned on so many because it's just like, It's annoying.
It is. I know. I'm the same way. I'll do them, but it's like, oh. What I don't like is when they want you to go somewhere, like, during the day. Like, can you sit in traffic and come all the way down here? And you're like, that can be a hassle, you know. But if it's like over the phone or it's like something like that,
or
then
like
I'm
Zoom.
I'm like, okay.
You know, but you don't get the quality though.
Yeah.
That you get when you sit. Like, one thing I learned about the Bad Friends podcast, they got a whole like team.
Yeah,
and they do that, like, that team does that one, and then it does Bobby's Tiger Belly with him and his girl.
Is it all things comedy, or is it not?
No.
Or it's something else.
This is just like a team.
Wow.
That they have. They got an advertising team. They got a production. It's like, I was like, damn, how the fuck? Like, this is fucking fantastic. And it's like, they're like, come over here, and then we go over here. We do, and then they do Tino's podcast, and then they do, I think they do Annie Lederman's, and them. Like, it's like, it's these same guys.
Wow.
Run, like, doing everybody's, it's like, and they know how to get the advertisement and get you the sponsors and all that. So, but the production quality is, it's dope.
Yeah.
You know, it's just on the level of Joe's or anybody else's. You know, I really have to give it to them two dudes. They do it.
In closing, where can people find you? Where would you like them to, what social media would you want them to follow you on?
Either on Facebook, Instagram, at Doc Willis Comedy. That's it. Doc Willis Comedy. Anything else is a fake page, and I'm not getting a blue check mark because I ain't
that guy.
I know. Dude, I didn't pay for it, but I got the blue check mark on Twitter like years ago. They said, just Google how to get it. And I Googled how to get it. I submitted. I go, yeah, I've had albums. I've been on this. I've been on that. I don't want people imitating me. So I'm the real one. Then I got it. I didn't really get anything of it. You know, I didn't get more followers or nothing.
It was stupid.
It was like,
I told you, man.
Yeah.
If the people ain't there, nothing else matters.
Right.
People get caught up in that's the world of technology. It's make believe. You know, it gives you the impression of you got to do this thing. It's almost similar to the people hanging out at the Comedy Store where we was just talking about with Sebastian. That's their blue check mark. Yeah. It's like all of these people want to be part of something because they believe it's going to give them this existence, and it never happens. And it's like, nah, it didn't happen because it's you. You are your existence. And then what makes you be big is the people.
Yep.
People.
Yeah.
You don't need a check mark if the people are behind you. You don't need none of that shit.
What's that noise? That was his radio?
Radio, yeah.
Wow, news flash. he looked like a slow-moving UFO. That's creepy as hell. But. Doc, great seeing you again, man. I'll see you later. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Good seeing you. Doc Willis. Dude, thanks for hanging out, man, at the park. You could have done a lot of things. I know you want to go home and read those books, so.
Yeah. Right,
so thank you.
It's embarrassing. I'm like, hey, they're going to come on.
All right, Doc. Thank you. That was cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody listen to Darren Carter. We all know he's the party starter. So if you want to listen to a podcast for free, then listen to The Pocket Party.